Well. It's the Pacific Rim spoiler ep is back from the dead, you guys. I want to thank Eric in Minnesota who fixed this episode. He's been listening since episode one when it was just in one ear before we figured out how to fix all that. So he fixed this. And thank you to everybody else who offered to help. I just want to give a shout out and a plug to Eric and Maya. They have a website called enchantedpencil.com, which is like a web comic. So check it out. It's cool. He fixed this episode for free. So go to enchantedpencil.com. You guys, this is an awesome community that we have created, and you guys are so great for fixing this because I didn't know what I was doing. So here it is, originally titled Spoiler Ep 9. It is now Spoiler Ep 10. I give you the Pacific Rim spoiler ep with Will Anderson.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Please be advised.
Spoiler alert episode. Spoiler.
Please be advised. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Well, how did you guys like the new theme song?
It's courtesy of Daniel Stevens.
Daniel Stevens, that was awesome. It's got robots and lasers and everything that you would need.
And it was nice of him to send in. We didn't ask for this one.
We didn't ask.
This was a...
Yes. Who gave the order?
That was really nice. So send it in. We did actually ask somebody to make one for us, but he was on vacation in fact, if anybody else wants to send in spoiler episode theme songs, maybe we'll rotate a few in and
out. So far, this one's great.
Yeah.
Of all the ones we've received.
Yeah, it's this one is number one.
No, but I like it.
Thank you. It's really, we love when you guys, you put the effort it does take some time to put these things together.
Yeah.
It really does. So we really appreciate it, Daniel. Thank you.
I think the first one we didn't have any theme song, and then we've just been using the regular theme song. And now, spoiler alert, episode 9? Did we know what number? We didn't even check to see what number this is. Spoiler episode 9, I think.
All right. You guys start. I'll find out.
And we have a guest because
Episode
9. Spoiler episode 9. Halfway to 18. Come on, you assholes. So that laugh that you're hearing is our guest. Mike Schmidt is here. He's taller, a little leaner. That's Mr. Will Anderson.
Stone the Flaming Crows.
Nice.
I'm going to talk in my Australian accent for this entire episode.
Stone the Flaming Crows? Is that a band?
No. Sounds like back rider instructions.
Yeah.
You got to stone the Flaming Crows before they go on. And then, no, that's an Australian expression, stone the Flaming Crows.
What does it mean?
Throw rocks at crows.
But like in what context?
When
would you use that? Like,
oh, it's just an expression like, oh, stone the Flaming Crows.
Like, son of a bitch.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's like an old person. There's a character on a TV show called Home and Away in Australia who's kind of the iconic Aussie. His name's Alf Stewart, and he's the guy who's been on the show for 25 years. And he runs the local surf club, and everything's flaming this and flipping this, and your little glitter, and like everything's flaming. Like everything, oh, these flaming kids with their flaming pinball machines. It's that sort of character. But my greatest moment ever in the history of Australian entertainment, in my opinion, was when him and his wife, who'd been married in the show for like 15, 20 years, right, their house catches on fire. Her name's Elsa, and she is caught in the house. Alf runs out of the house, and it's got to have been on purpose. He goes, "We've got to get Elsa out of the house. That's me flaming wife in there." So...
That is the greatest moment.
So, yes. And apparently his voice was what they modeled all the Australian accents in Pacific Rim on. I mean, this is, I know I right, mentioned
go
this.
Ahead, go.
Okay, well, this is, I'm just going to say this up front. I've never been in that situation. And I'm sure that, French people or Russian people or whatever have had to for years put up with people doing these terrible, terrible accents. But I was just like, these are the most, why would you get an American guy and a British guy to bung on these broad, like, Australian accents? I just couldn't, like, I was like, are they going to wear, like, a like a hat with like corks on it, and like seriously, like is their robot going to start playing the didgeridoo or something? Like it's going to have a giant robot boomerang. It's like it was so amazing to me. It was like yeah, it was stunning. It was jarring to my ears.
Well, the crazy thing was, is the American.
I would have loved if the robot had a giant boomerang. That would have been great.
I think that was one of the missed opportunities in the whole film, by the way.
We were talking about that, and the more you say it, the more I'm like, yeah, I could kind of see it. Why didn't the Japanese robot have a giant katana?
Right.
Why did it have a third arm instead? You know,
right. And because the thing is, and I mean, I guess, you know, look, I assume some people have seen it, but for people who haven't seen it, that they... Yeah, each of the teams. So you got the Russian. So they had the Russian
husband and wife team, which was like right out of Rocky III.
Yeah,
right. This was Drago.
This is the year 2020, but apparently the Drago look is back.
It's just come back.
Yes, from the 80s. Yeah, yeah, it was like, oh, so we have an 80s robot team. Yeah.
That was amazing.
It was Ivan Drago and the girl from Roxette.
Yeah,
yes.
And then there was the Australians, the father and son Australian team.
Well, the father, Max Martini,
yep.
is one of these really solid character actors that I like. You know, he's in Saving Private Ryan.
Now, wait
Ryan.
A minute. This is a great question. Were they really father and son in the movie?
What do you mean?
Like, I was watching this movie, and I thought that Idris Elbow mm-hmm. had a...
That's correct.
When,
absolutely, 100% correct.
When he first came in, he's like, I saw you had daddy issues, so I solved that pretty quick. So I was wondering if he just put him with an older person, and then that made kind of the whole thing towards at the end, like, he's my son, that's my father. That was more like of like, they're not really, but they become so close that that's how they feel about each other. Or are you saying that they were actual father and son?
Well, whatever. I'm saying, who gives a shit?
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Why did they hire?
I feel like that you have imagined a better film than it was.
Yes, yes. Yes, I think.
I could. I might have put more in right. than was intended.
You might have been on the drift.
Yes,
you might have had a mind meld. Yeah. I can't wait for Pacific Rim 2 Tokyo Drift.
Yeah. This movie. Okay.
Okay.
First From of the all, start, I Max guess. Martini is an actor I really like. That's why I was so like, why is he doing this shitty Australian accent? Mm. Like. He was in Red Belt. Like I like this actor a lot. I just and I think he did the best with the. All right, you want me to do this? Oh no, mate! You know, like
I agree. I actually thought that he was quite charismatic on screen.
And just the. I mean, he was, which is a testament to how good of an actor he is. He got you past the shitty accent.
Right.
The son, like. He was just like one of the meatheads from the Karate Kid or something that they got. Like it was, that was very puzzling to me. But let's get into this because the Australian accents are the smallest of the problems with this. Why would you design a robot that has to have two drivers whose minds have to meld, who then can physically feel the pain that the robot gets when it gets hit?
Okay, I can answer the first half of that, not the second.
Okay, okay.
The first half was, I think it was an interesting plot device because the feedback from the robots was so strong that one brain couldn't handle it. So you actually had to have two brains that actually be able to control this giant robot. So I bought that.
And the premise is also that the two brains have to be compatible.
They have to be compatible, yes.
That's why it's father and, well, you know, possibly father and son.
Brothers.
The brothers.
Right. So I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. I bought that.
80s villains.
Yeah, or 80s villains. What I didn't understand is...
Reagan-era Red Scare villains. We need those minds.
Well, the one thing I didn't understand is the second half of that is like
officers from the original Red Dawn. You need those. You need them.
Or the officer from Officer and a Gentleman.
The officer. Yes. Right.
Who's teaching Richard Gere karate?
Yeah, exactly.
So, but the second half I didn't quite buy is because if you have all this technology, you obviously are going to. Have some kind of pain dampening system where if a robot gets his arm cut off, the actual operator is not going to feel it. But that's they went the other direction where you feel everything's happening to the robot, which makes no sense. Like any airline pilot, if your airplane gets shot, you don't feel that. I mean, that took it a little too far.
Why would you have this piece of technology that is like the amazing technology? And what you just said, like, I buy the, okay, we need two pilots. Like there's fighter helicopters or jet fighters where they need two pilots. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. But that makes that just so, oh good, we're going to make this giant weapon a little more vulnerable against these fucking demonic space dragons.
Yeah.
What did make, I didn't understand that at all.
Well, one of the
and that was one of the giant another flaw in this.
Okay,
film.
And I think that was just that could have again could have been explained a little bit more with a little bit more development in the script, because the whole premise to this at the beginning of the movie was that, you know, the robots that we built, they were good enough. We were kicking the monsters' ass.
Yep.
We were actually, now we're on TV shows. We're kind of making fun of the monsters. There's little stuffed animals in the monsters.
And the pilots were heroes.
The pilots were heroes. Mm-hmm.
They looked like heroes, though.
Yeah, and they did.
On the TV, when they were being interviewed on Leno or whatever, they were just guys in, like, military suits.
Right.
Right.
So everything, like, the robots, they were good enough. They were actually winning. But to actually, then when you get to, like, and then everything changed. Mm. And it's like, well, wait, how did it change?
Right.
And we kind of skip over.
What sort of world were we living in? And no, I don't want to live in this world, by the way, where we've built giant, like, robots that can fight monsters and we get bored of that.
Right.
Someone goes, let's go in a different direction. No, let's not. Keep going with the giant robots.
Yeah, obviously they work. Just make them better. Upgrade them. Right. That's all you
craziest,
have to do.
Like, the whole, that was the thing that drove me nuts. They introduced this thing and then the whole goddamn world would be thinking 24/7 about these fucking lizards.
Right. Better robots. That's all you'd be thinking.
That's all you'd be thinking. The whole world. Like,
a little bigger,
the World War II effort, you know, it would have been like that times 1,000,
right,
only with every single living human being on the planet.
And that's where it also, the plotting fell apart, where then, oh, we're just going to build a giant wall. Really? You're
yeah. Because even though it's the year 2020, nobody's seen World War Z.
Yeah. You know,
walls don't work, people.
Yeah.
That's what we've learned.
And no one's seen these monsters, I guess, that have destroyed fucking cities.
And then when the creature goes right through the wall, they're like, no, I still think that's our best bet, is the wall. Why would we do
that? That huge robot,
again?
that lizard just fucking knocked it out, but a wall is going to...
Wall's good though, right? Yeah. And they don't take long to build, do they, walls?
Yeah.
There's no way that it'll come through the wall when the wall's not fully constructed. Oh.
No, if it's not fully constructed, they're going to wait.
Just wait.
The dragons will wait till it's done. That's
union
fair.
Union thing, I think.
Yes, so, the dragons are in a union. Let's not be assholes.
So that's the stuff that kind of fell apart. But now, what I did like...
The fucking wormhole. Like, did you buy...
Yes, I did, and here's why. Because I like the idea that... I mean, when you get back to these stories and the old kind of the Japanese series and stuff, there was literally... a lot of times, no reason for giant monsters just to start showing up.
Right.
And I love the fact that they took this a step further. Like, why are these monsters coming in? What is their purpose? Do they have a purpose? And is there someone controlling them on the other side? And all of that was explored, which I thought was really kind of cool. I like that a lot. And I also, I would have liked to have seen, like, why different attempts to close the wormhole wouldn't work. I mean, it was just one line of dialogue. Like, oh, we've tried it. It didn't work. Mm. Well, wait. What did you try? This is like a big deal.
Right.
This is where the monsters are coming. You would think that there'd be everything from monitoring state, you know, all this stuff to different attempts to close it or whatever. And that was kind of like passed over. Although I did like the fact that there was reasons why they couldn't send a bomb through, and then when they eventually did it at the end, I thought that was cool because it was coded to the monster's DNA.
Sure.
And these monsters were created to invade the in the world. So I thought all that stuff was really cool. I thought there was some really cool science fiction elements, and I thought that stuff made sense. But then the other stuff that kind of did, I'm like, well, you know, this just a little bit more time. Again, a little bit more time on the script can really polish these little things.
And like, oh, well, I guess we have to have the wacky scientist. No, you don't. How about the best and brightest would be put on this? This isn't like, it was like Armageddon.
This is why people don't believe in global warming.
Yeah.
That's why the films represent scientists.
Yeah. Or even Charlie Day was like, okay, he's kind of a little bit over the top. But then the other guy, who's a famous British comedian, by the way. Mm. If we can pull him up, I don't remember his name.
I thought Charlie Day did an okay job.
I thought he did an okay job.
I think this is a movie of mixed performances. Like, I think there are some people who did okay job.
He was as far to the side of wacky that you wanted to go with a scientist in this movie.
Right.
But the problem is, whatever notes or direction the other guy was getting, Bern Gorman.
Yeah, he was also one of the villains in Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, and he's been acting for years, mm-hmm. and he was so over the top and so ridiculous. He was doing a sketch character.
Right.
And that just did not gel at all. I mean, it was like, and he was doing a British sketch character. Like, he was literally from a Monty Python sketch.
Right. And then you've got the lead actor playing an American who's actually British. And you've got some English and Americans playing Australia. Like, seriously, just let some of the people in the film do their own accents.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a global problem. Right. You know, you can, everyone's going to be involved. Yeah, you don't have to mix
the whole world.
Yeah.
So
there was something about the racism that, like, I found really, I mean, you know, like, I mean, when I say, because essentially the premise is that, firstly, yeah, we built, the robots are coming back. Stringer Bell, whatever his name is in this.
Idris Elba.
Stacker Pentecost. In this film. I went through the names because I found them really fascinating. Because all the monsters and all the, like, the robots have kind of cool names. Mm-hmm. But the Russian one, so the Russian one's called Cherno Alpha, right? Do you really think that they would name their robot after their biggest disaster in their country? Like, hey guys, I know that we've got this robot divide the, should we name it after Chernobyl? You guys remember Chernobyl, right? That's something that our country likes to bring up all the time, right?
The American one is going to be the 9/11 towers. Yeah. Let's go. Yeah, Hurricane, like, Katrina.
It's like Vodka Stalin.
Yeah, Vodka Stalin.
The Australian one was called Striker Eureka. Crimson Typhoon was the Asian one.
The three basketball playing twins.
Yes, and then
and they always had a basketball on them, and they're in they're in the mess hall. They always have jumpsuits and a basketball.
If that came up later in the film, like if there was some payoff to that,
right.
I don't mind that cartoonish aspect of it if there was payoff in the fights. And I just felt like there was so much room for their personalities of the guys who were like, you know.
And you really wanted to see, that's a great point, because you wanted to see all these different personalities interacting out of the robots, but also fighting with each other.
Like Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Like you guys mentioned in the regular episode, it's like Street Fighter. They should have fought with these qualities. Wouldn't you love to see a giant robot doing some, like, kung fu spinning kick right into the teeth of one of these monsters? That would have been awesome. And then land in the ocean or whatever.
And pose.
Yeah, it would be great if the monster was coming towards it.
I would have cheered if I would have seen that.
And it's doing the crane from Karate Kid.
Yeah, yeah. So what else, Will? Because you took extensive notes. I
did.
Hear
okay,
this.
So, well, the main robot's called Gypsy Danger. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't feel like that's... that feels like racism to me.
Yeah, but it's not inaccurate.
Right.
Gypsies are dangerous.
If there's a gypsy... You're in danger.
Yeah, watch your wallet.
Yeah.
Do you know what I thought was a kind of a funny idea? But like Charlie Hunnam-a-mum, Jack's from Sons of Anarchy.
Yes.
Does the same Sons of Anarchy walk in this movie. He does that, like he's got the thumbs in
the swagger.
Waistband and he does the swagger. But then they get the robot to do the swagger. I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
A little swagger.
Sure.
It's like any of that stuff was kind of cool. So I had a problem with the wall. That was like my main thing.
That was my biggest plot problem with that. It was like, well, that makes no sense. No, what, every other leader of the known world, free world, is stupid and realizes that the wall that's not going to work, they're all still 100% behind it, even after one goes through it.
Yeah, every world leader is like, we'll just keep them like a zoo in the oceans of our world. Like, so we can't ever go in the oceans, so there's no commerce anymore, there's no fishing, there's no trade, there's no nothing, because they have now, we're just going to hide.
Because we've given the monsters our ocean.
Right. Yeah. And no one went, hey, what if they're breeding, or what if they're whatever? Nobody questioned that, except Stringer Bell.
Right. Oh, so here's another thing that, because there's that moment, and we spoke about it in the regular episode, where he makes that big speech, you know, about, mm-hmm. you know, the day that we stopped Armageddon or whatever it is. That's one of those moments where I'm like, that's fine. Like, you know, you need your big cheesy, rousy speech,
right?
But it's terrible.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a terrible speech. Mm-hmm. Like, it should have been that.
It could have been better.
Right. Or it could have just at least been an Independence Day style speech. You know, that moment where you're like,
today is our Independence Day.
Yeah. There you go. Then bang. That's what it was trying to be.
He could have actually said, today is our Independence Day.
Yeah. It could have actually been that line. Yeah.
Just take that actual line.
In fact, some of you guys, there should have been a scene of him watching Independence Day. Yeah.
And then going, there we go. I got a speech.
Just making some notes.
That's all he's. He's watching Armageddon. He's watching Independence Day. That's all he does. Well, let me ask you this, because we talked, and I want to get more into this.
Yeah.
Why, again, we So they shoot us out of a cannon to start the movie.
Yes.
And then Charlie Hanneman does his Superman thing and goes and just anonymously works on one of these walls in Alaska,
right,
where they're paid with rations. Like, they don't address, they introduce that and they don't address that shit at all. Like, no. Well, I saw that and went, well, this is fascinating.
Yeah.
So the whole world is getting rationed because of the supplies, because of the which is, again, goes back to the, there's no way all these world leaders would be like, just build a wall, because they'd be like, we can't fucking eat. Right. We can't get supplies. Like, the leaders of Australia would clearly go, no, you know, we're out here alone or whatever. Any country that's isolated would go, fuck that. We got to kill these things. Why is he doing his Superman thing? Like, that to me, and it's like, we need you back on the team. Why do you even have that
scene? The
other
thing, too, is that, to make that a little bit more believable, is why was he working on the wall? Wouldn't he want to just forget about the monsters and the fight and everything? If he was literally in a cabin in the right middle of nowhere, you could see that, sure, more.
Right.
That would be kind of cool if he's just like, yeah, I'm done. Let him come.
Let him come. Yeah, I don't care.
I don't give a shit. Know. My brother's dead.
Right.
I don't care. I'm going to fish. I'm out. And then,
but instead, I'm going to go and work on the wall for minimum wage.
Yeah.
That's almost as dangerous as being a robot pilot. Right.
Yeah.
Like, guy gives a speech about three guys died today at the top of the wall. Guess what? Three positions working on the top of the wall.
Yeah. Good luck, everybody.
Why the fuck are you there?
Right. That's like somebody saying, my family were killed at that, like, traffic lights. I'm going to get a stop and slow sign and just stand nearby. That's got to be my job. Minimum wage. So I'm reminded of my pain every day.
Every day.
How did Stringer Bell fund? Because there was that moment in the film, do you remember, where it was like, yeah, we're canceling the program. And then there was another where he was like, we don't need the government funding.
Like, what do you mean we don't need them? You're making giant robots.
Yeah. Those free? Yeah. Giant robots are free?
Yeah. That was and that leads back into, like, this problem with the wall. I mean, it was all an unnecessary script problem. You really didn't need any of that. I mean, you could have had a different program or, like, that, you know, but it wouldn't. I mean, it's ridiculous.
This, as soon as they saw it wasn't
working. But also that thing of, like, even with the technology, you could have done, I mean, because they did it at the end where they, like, because the newer model went offline.
Sure.
Right.
And it was
right.
Like, hang on. Gypsy's analog.
And there's no way Gypsy would be analog.
You can't believe Gypsy's analog. Oh, and Bruce Wayne hasn't fixed the in-flight autopilot either.
Yeah.
Really? Is this going to be a plot point?
Yeah. It was the thing that drove me nuts about the wall and Stringer Bell having to, you know, have a bake sale to fund the robots is some idiot, and maybe it's this jackalope that wrote fucking Clash of the Titans. He's the writer, Travis Beecham. Clearly there was a discussion or even a thought process of, well, we need to have some kind of a conflict. No, you don't. There's goddamn dragons coming through a wormhole that are going to kill us all. There's your conflict.
That seems like conflict.
I think is there anything else more than the destruction of the human race?
Yeah, I think we're good.
That shit drives me crazy.
And this is where, like, when you have science fiction, you have to pay attention to the science. And I get it, the fact that these creatures that were coming through, they were being upgraded.
Mm.
They were actually being evolved by their masters who were creating them.
Which was cool.
And I totally saw one that would have an electromagnetic pulse that would shut down the robots. I get it. I bought it. I thought that was great. However, when you have an electromagnetic pulse, it destroys all electronics. It doesn't matter if it's digital or analog. If it runs on electricity, it would be done.
Right.
That makes no sense that...
and there's no way Gypsy is analog.
Yeah.
And then they go in there and they're like, oh, Gypsy's analog. And then they get hooked up to the brain robots, and there's all these touch screens.
Unless it was run by a steam engine. Yeah.
That has touch screens. It's a steam engine powered touch screen.
That was another, like, well, that's ridiculous. Like, again, easier and better way to do it is like, all right, well, now we got to develop shields, but we only have time to shield one robot from the electromagnetic pulse.
Yeah. Bam. Gypsy gets the shield.
Yeah. Done.
Well, let's go.
And those little details that I think are important, especially in science fiction. It's one fucking draft. That's all you have to do.
That's what it feels like to me when you watch these big budget studio, and there's probably four or five punch up guys that we don't even know their goddamn names. You think you can just? There's just such a like a a rush or a laziness to it.
Because of the schedules, absolutely.
Because the schedules, yeah. And they're worried about all these other things. Well, we got to shoot
marketing
in Hong Kong
and, yeah.
for 3 months, and we got to deal with all that. So there isn't this like...
Need time for the 3D conversion.
Right. We got to fucking... It's going to take us to, you know, up the resolution on this goddamn thing for 9 months. So why... Then they just miss all of these things, these little details that make a film. I don't care if the budget is $500,000 or $200 million. You have to have these details in there. And then they do cool details. Like I want to talk about the mind melding thing, right? Mm-hmm. And how Charlie Day, who I find funny, I like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, me too.
And they hired him to just do his thing. Yep, but again, right. It's like I'm done with. The world is going to end, and we hire these wacky, bumbling scientists. Like,
but him, I bought. It was the other guy that drove me nuts.
Right.
But also, I think it's such a lazy way of providing comic relief. Mm-hmm. And if you are going to provide comic relief, it should both be comic and relief.
And a relief.
Like, not a comic burden.
By the end, I was praying for a scene like they had in the Avengers, you know, when Hulk like just smashed, Thor. And I just wanted one of those where one of the robots smashed like those annoying scientists. Because right. you were like, I know that you guys are the good guys.
This could have gone back to like what you're talking about. If we saw the more interaction between the teams and the robots, I mean, after a fight, maybe one guy smacks the other guy in the head with the robot, you know.
Perfect,
like
right?
Like, yeah, I mean, and it just to show the rivalry. And there would have been a little comic relief.
And
yeah.
And also, though, I mean.
Where he throws a boat at him.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Right. By the way, the dragging the boat through downtown forever and hitting him with like a baseball bat was great.
Fantastic.
That was great. Mm. And the one where the sword comes out and they cut its fucking head off.
Yeah, I was like, yeah.
That shit was
And there
awesome.
Was cheering in the cinema when I was watching it. There was definitely people cheering those scenes. And look, I thought all that stuff was great.
That was what we want to see.
Yeah, yeah.
Just you don't have to make it stupid. Like, that's what drives me nuts.
And also, you know what? In one of those films where, like, the female lead, and we haven't really talked about her much, but there's that whole scene where, like, you know, Idris Elba's character is all about, oh, you know, I'm not going to let her get in the robot. Right. And, like, you know, he's the End of story. And then in the next scene, he's like, oh, no, you can get in the robot.
Yeah.
Different story. Right. Start of different story.
Well, she's Rinko Kikuchi is the Japanese actress who plays... What does he play? Miko, I think is her name.
Well, you know, there's sometimes in movies, like I understand in a movie like this that you're not going to necessarily be challenged all the time.
Sure.
But
that's fine. It can be fun. Movie,
yeah, exactly. I actually think this movie had a lot of themes where they could have done something more interesting, but I think that you don't need to. But we all know from the start when she comes in that she's going to be the co-pilot, right?
Right.
You
exactly.
know.
Yeah.
Like there is not one person in that cinema who doesn't. And we also all know there will be some sort of, you know, trial to get there before she gets there. But we all know. So just give us one trial. If that's what you're going to do, you're going to do the cliche. But don't go, oh, she's in, she's out, she's in again. Ugh. Like, I mean, seriously.
And then she gets in and she freezes up. Right. She goes on a brain drift or whatever. Like, that was...
Although I will say that scene, and that was one of the great scenes that I wanted to see more of. When she flashes back to her as a kid, she sees the giant monster coming through the city.
The kid was amazing,
that
too.
That was cool.
Yeah, I thought the kid did a good job.
But you got to see it. It was it was a brightly lit. You could actually see the monster, and it was this giant crab-like creature. And it was terrifying, you know, to see, because you could see that thing coming through your town and then just, like, searching for anything just to eat. And it was, to me, like, that's... I thought that was great. But yeah, I mean, it was okay. We get it. She's
like
a trial.
Said, it needed another draft because all the mind melding stuff. And then when Charlie Day mind melded with the alien brain, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that was really cool.
And that's how they like figured out what's on the other end of the wormhole and what they're going to do, like what the alien's plan is.
Right.
Like that was so interesting to me.
But also, I think they did a good job with that, which I liked, was that they showed some consequence for that as well.
Right.
You know, they didn't just do that movie thing of going, you mind melded with him and thus we've got all the answers we need to do. They didn't. They kind of like, and this has been an advantage for the monsters as well. You know, so I thought that was well done.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was good too.
I thought that was interesting that then that gave his mind melding that now the alien monsters knew who he was and where he was and they could use that like strategically. Yeah. That was really cool. Mm-hmm. But Let's get into the other guy from Sons of Anarchy. That was the
Ron Perlman.
That was the
Well, he's also been in most of Guillermo del Toro's movies.
Sure,
yes, Hellboy.
I don't know about that character. Like, did we need that character? Did we need the you know illegal, you know, alien parts dealer with the crazy?
I would say he was my feeling about that. It was probably completely unnecessary to the movie, but I kind of felt like it came alive a bit. Like, I actually enjoyed when he was on screen. Like, to me, I was like, I wouldn't have minded more of that. And if you stayed, did you stay till the credits?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So
the credit thing is great. With the thing at the credits where he pops out and goes, "Where's my shoes?" That was funny. I say this, you know what? I bet you, because I really like Ron Perlman, I bet you if they put a lesser actor in there, it wouldn't have
no
worked.
No
right.
And
because I think thematically or from a script standpoint, you go, I guess I see, like, all right, now we have to get this brain. But again, that kind of goes into this whole sort of manufactured drama of the main countries, the UN doesn't support us, and now we got to go underground. Like, it's all this other, like, convoluted nonsense.
Well, yeah, and that could have been
avoided. I guess a guy like him would pop up in this world.
But... Oh, no, that's, again, and this is, again, one draft. The character, I thought it was fine. And the fact that there is going to be a black market for like these monster parts, got
right.
it.
Right, yeah,
I
absolutely.
Thought it was great. And it would be like us saying, look, there's only one guy that knows how to get this. Whether you're government-funded or not, you could use that character and go. He knows where everything is. Just go. Because, what, you know, the militaries of any country don't deal with unsavory characters? Of course they do.
Right.
So it's completely believable right. without this. It's like, we have nowhere else to go to get this, you know, because we're not being funded. So it was just, it would have been just a little twist and it would have been absolutely fine. But yeah, I liked the character. I liked kind of what he was doing. And I believe the fact that, you know, people are like, oh yeah, there's monsters destroying the world, but yeah, I want that bone powder, you know, or whatever. Like, I want that, like, those souvenirs. Or clearly they have, like, you know, Viagra-like qualities or whatever. And I see that. I totally see that. So, but yeah, and Ron Perlman, I think, is just contractually obligated to be in most of Guillermo del Toro's
movies.
And I thought he did a great job, and I liked it too. And that was the kind of comic
relief. Thank God
relief.
He wasn't doing an accent.
Yeah. But that was the kind of comic relief that fit the movie. It wasn't over the top. It wasn't crazy, and it fit. So I was actually okay with a lot of that.
Right, right. And just, you know, can we just enough with wacky scientists? You know what I mean? Yeah, just have guys like that are trying to – okay, scientists that are debating theories. That's always interesting, and I have this theory, and the mainstream doesn't.
You know,
okay.
I didn't mind the actual premise of the idea was that they were two scientists who had different approaches to solving the problem, because that's you know, you have to...
That's right. What always is happening.
And maybe they don't... Here's an idea. Maybe they don't always have to be nerds. You know, what about House?
Right.
You know, what if you got a brilliant scientist who's a huge asshole?
Right. And, which a lot of them are. They're crazy egomaniacs.
Right.
Batman's a scientist.
Yeah. Bruce Wayne is a crazy, good-looking playboy scientist.
You know, do twist it a little bit. Do something a little different.
All right. So, Will, what else? You have any more notes you want to?
I don't think there was anything else in particular that I that was most of the stuff. I liked the look of it when Ron Perlman came in. That was the other thing. I thought that all that stuff looked fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It's almost Blade Runner like,
right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought in a really good way.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's when I thought, like, you know, I was like, oh, I wish that. Like, even when they were in the, whatever their Thunderdome was, when they were, where they were all hanging out. Again, you were like, oh, well, this is like a good looking, you know, like a lot of that stuff. I just was really disappointed in the, that that chunk for 40 minutes where you just go, oh, God.
Yeah, and again, introducing all of the other teams and never getting to know them ever. They had no speaking parts, the other teams, other than the Aussies. Like, you know what I mean? Like, The Chinese, and the Russian.
Oh, my God. Why did that dude have a dog? Sorry, Hollywood, but what, is this fucking Marley and Me now?
I know. God.
Like, seriously.
And again, you can just see the, like, we need a cute dog.
Yeah, we'll put a dog in it. That'll...
We got to have this thing. And, of course, you know, all right. You go to a movie like this, they say, oh, this is the wormhole. You know they're going to blow it up.
Yeah.
You know they're going to blow it up. And is someone going to... The question is... Is Jarlay Hanaban, is he going to die doing it? Like, right. Is he going to not come back?
Right.
Is there going to be that, like, no, this is my, I'm doing this. And then he dies and they end the movie with doing a, you know, they dedicate the name of a thing to him or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you knew that was going to happen. The way they did it was cool, suspenseful. And of course, did his ejection pod make it to the top or not?
Right. I thought maybe they're going to do a little black hole. And he was going to like see his brother when he was at the end of the wormhole,
right?
Like it was like,
or were they going to? Or were they going to have him like, oh, now he's got to live? He's got to survive in the alien world, and we're like sequel, like
yeah.
So the sequel is going to be we got to reopen the wormhole to go get him or something, you know?
But, yeah, it was fine. It was expected, but it was fine.
I will say this: I'm glad that him and the Japanese actress didn't like kiss at the end, because it's like, oh, there's sexual tension. But because I guess if you're going to introduce this thing of you need to be compatible to share a brain and work this robot, mm-hmm. right? If they fall in love, does that compromise? Is that like, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that wasn't explored.
That wasn't really explored.
Although the Russians, but is that really Russian love when they married?
Drink it.
Yeah.
Drink it all.
I must break you.
That was nice, catching that jack on the turn. Oh, now I'm doing Rounders. Now I'm doing John Malkovich from Rounders, which I love. I love doing John Malkovich from Rounders. all the time, check, check, check. I'm sorry. They should have had that. They should have had that. Anyway, so... The question here, before we wrap this up, it did $37.3 million. Actually, Despicable Me 2 took the weekend, just barely. It beat Grown Ups by a couple of million. Are we going to see another one? And would you want to see one? And what would the story be?
Okay, I don't know, because a lot of times this stuff goes by the opening weekend, which is a shame. Because I really hope the takeaway, and it will be, because the executives are dumb.
How is the Hollywood press spinning it though? Are they spinning it as a big bomb, or are they spinning it like it's
that? Open? I don't know. I haven't read that. But here's the thing about it: is the worst takeaway, and I think this will happen, is like, see, it's not a franchise, it's not a superhero, it's not a known property. Now we can't do that anymore with tentpole movies. It has to be a known character, because the takeaway won't be, well, the Lone Ranger was a known character and it was a disaster. But right. that will never be the takeaway. The takeaway is the one without a superhero or a known character or a known book, didn't do as well. And I really think this movie, because ultimately I think the fans are liking it. I mean, I liked it. When you go to see this movie, you kind of know what you're expecting. Neil liked it. He has a review up on the site. I mean, a lot of stuff. The problems I have with it were
nitpicky. I'd read some good fan fiction about it. And, if someone could take the suggestions I've put out there.
And would I want to see a sequel? Absolutely. I want to see more giant robots fighting monsters. And ultimately, I think this was the kind of plotting that it wouldn't be that hard to figure out a sequel, I think. You know, maybe this time the aliens, okay, well, the wormhole didn't work. Now we're going to come from space. So it's giant spaceships and stuff landing all over the planet. Things, something like that. It's definitely doable, and I would love to see a sequel.
All right,
but it has to be Guillermo del Toro directing it, because I think if this gets to yes, I didn't say the screenwriter.
Guillermo del Toro wrote it with this guy.
Yeah, but if this gets pawned off to like McGee, then I will not see the sequel.
Yeah, I would love to see a sequel. It's really funny. We were talking before about off air about Man of Steel, and I was saying that I've seen Man of Steel twice, and I didn't mind it both times. But the more I talk about it, the more I don't like it. You know, right. I have so many problems with that film.
Mm-hmm.
This one's kind of the opposite for me. Like, I didn't love it when I was at the movies. Like, I there was bits of it that I really loved, and then there was like a chunk of it that I found like really disappointing. But the more I talk about it, the more I think that I liked it, and I'd definitely like to see a better version of it.
Right.
Like, I think it's all there.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
It's all here, guys.
Right.
It's like all the ingredients are here. Mm-hmm. They've just not really made a meal as exciting as...
Right.
Just stir it a little bit.
Right.
But there's a couple of sides.
Or take out a couple of things as well. Like, there's like a couple of things here that you don't need.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, even the dinosaurs link. Do you know what? Like, it's just in the middle.
Yeah, that was completely like, it was someone
like, again, it was like, put in a dog. Mention dinosaur.
Have them kiss.
Right. What?
No. Yeah, I would like to see if they could tighten it up. keep the action, make the action better with, you know, each robot has its own style.
And when Graham says tighten it up, I think you mean too, don't take out character development. Just, you know, change it a little bit and make it a little bit more.
Well, here's what I mean by tighten it up too. Don't introduce a bunch of people and don't tell me about
exactly.
them. Don't even
exactly.
introduce them then.
Yeah, yeah.
Just keep it on this core group of people and right. let me know more about them.
Right.
And then have me see all these like crouching tiger type fight scenes.
That's a good note.
You know?
That is. Yeah. I mean,
Wouldn't that be really
interesting? Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I would love to know more about why Jackson and Stringer Bell have some sort of history. Like they clearly, like, let's get more into that. Let's get right. more into why Stringer Bell, oh, he was one of these pilots?
Right.
And now he gets nosebleeds?
Yeah.
Well, what the
right,
fuck's
right.
going on?
Exactly.
No, tell
yeah.
me more about, like, give me into his, why he's such a hard ass. Give me some sort of emotional speech or something confiding in someone like in his quarters, like, look, man, and revealing a little bit of his pain that he knows he can't show because he's got to be the leader. That would have been so interesting to me. You know, that one scene where he's like, I say two things to you. One, don't put your hands on me. Two, don't put your hands on me. Okay, haha. You know what I mean? And then gets him to cower to him. Like, I would want to know more because, again, Idris Elba is such a good actor that I would want to know more about why he is driven by
give
this.
Give him a little more backstory.
Give him
sure.
a little more backstory, mm-hmm. man. Give him some more fucking scenes because he's such an amazing actor. That's what I would do. Mm-hmm. You hear that, studio?
And also, I found it really weird that Charlie Hunnam, Jax from Sons of Anarchy, like he's menacing in Sons of Anarchy. I love yeah. Sons of Anarchy. And he's menacing.
And he's Irish.
And he has like, yeah, and he has this whole thing where he's like, but he's got a bit of like, you know, you go, oh yeah, he could like really mess you up.
And
they didn't let him, like, whether he didn't get it across or whether he had no opportunity to get, but you're like, this is who this guy should be. He should be a little bit broken. Like his brother got killed in the opening scene. Like this thing's haunting him. Like yeah. let the reason that like, you know, he's going to win this fight and he can help is because he is a little bit. You know, more.
That's why yeah. if they're going to have him, like we talked about, if they're going to have him just go off the grid, then show that what you're talking about of how he's broken and a little angry. And wouldn't it be great to have him be like, I don't give a shit if I die.
Right.
And maybe Idris Elba goes, well, that's the guy we need in there.
Yeah.
He's
alone.
Got nothing to lose
yeah.
and he wants fucking blood. Go, you know, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. All right. Anything else before we wrap
up? No, I think we covered everything.
Who knew we were going to talk for 40 minutes about Pacific Rim? awesome. Well, that was so fun. Will Anderson, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Will_Anderson. It's Will with one L on Twitter, or you can listen to my podcast, which is called Tofop. Just, yeah, Google Tofop and you'll find it. Named after, of course, Russell Crowe's band. The podcast, 30-odd foot a pod, but his band was 30-odd foot a grunt. And then they changed their name to The Ordinary Fear of God, which you might notice is exactly the same initials, Tofog, because he didn't want to have to change his merch. Changed the band, renamed them, didn't change the merch. Tofog. Well done, Russell Crowe.
Genius. Thank you, Russell. All right.
Buy a gift pack from him, you get a free phone.
Get a free phone. Sweet. I didn't know that. Yeah, buy a gift bag from us, get a free drain claw. All right, guys. My name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first. In a wormhole.